Okay, so you're deep in constitutional law, right? Trying to make sense of how power split up in our government. And then boom, you bump into United States versus Curtiss-Wright Export Corporation, 1936 case that, well, kind of pokes at like so many big parts of the system. And so that is exactly why today
It's a good one.
we are taking a deep dive into it.
Yeah, this case is like crucial, I think, if you really want to grasp how separation of powers works, especially when you bring in the non-delegation doctrine and,
Right.
all that kind of hefty authority the president has in foreign policy, which people debate all the time.
Absolutely. So, all right, imagine it's the mid-1930s.
Correct.
Bolivia and Paraguay are stuck in the Chaco War. The US is like, nope, we're staying out of this.
Right.
Congress goes and passes this joint resolution in 1934. Now, this resolution says the president, he can slap on an arms embargo if he thinks it'll help bring peace.
Okay.
Sounds simple enough, right? But here's the big question, and this is what we're going to really dig into today. Did Congress mess up? Did they give the president too much power? Was this like against the Constitution because they gave away legislative power?
That is the question, isn't it? And it's super interesting to look at how different courts tackled this,
Yeah.
different levels of the courts. Like, remember, the district court actually sided with Curtiss-Wright, the company, the arms maker, that got in trouble for selling weapons while this embargo was going on. District Judge Byers, he was not happy about this.
Not all.
His reasoning was crystal clear. He said, and I'm quoting here, "Congress alone must conclude whether a law will work. Letting the president judge its future efficacy is legislative abdication." Strong words.
And that quote, it really nails what the district court was worried about, you know?
Totally. They saw it as Congress basically saying, "Hey, Mr. President, you decide if this law we're making, if it's actually going to bring peace or not." And Judge Byers, he felt strongly that figuring out if a law is going to work, especially if it's about predicting stuff in the future, that's Congress's job. That's legislation. That's their thing. And by giving the president that power, they were basically ditching their own responsibility.
Absolutely. And it wasn't that the district court like didn't get the president's role in dealing with other countries.
Right.
They knew the president has powers in international stuff.
Of course, yeah.
But they were drawing a hard line. They said this delegation, this giving away of power, it went too far. It l let the president make a big policy decision about what's going to happen down the line. Will this embargo bring peace? Instead of just carrying out a policy that Congress already set.
Exactly. They were laser focused on what exactly was being handed over that power. Was it just the president getting the tools to carry out something Congress had already decided? Or was it letting him basically make policy based on, his own guess about how things would turn out? The district court, they were convinced it was that second thing.
But you know, this legal story, it didn't end there. It went up to the Supreme Court, and boy, did they have a different take on things.
Oh, yeah. Totally different viewpoint. The Supreme Court, with Justice Sutherland writing the opinion, they overturned the district court's decision.
Big time.
Big time. And their main point, the power to handle foreign affairs, it's not just something Congress gives you. It comes with being the president.
Inherent.
Inherent. It's like baked into the presidency from the get-go is part of what makes a country, sovereignty and all that.
And that leads us to, you know, the famous sole organ doctrine. So for those of us who might not be totally up on that, what does that mean?
Sure, yeah. The sole organ doctrine, like Justice Sutherland laid it out, it basically says that the president is the main guy, and in a lot of ways, the only guy who speaks for the U.S. when dealing with other countries. Think about it. Who negotiates the treaties? Who welcomes the ambassadors? It's the president, the executive branch.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and the court, they figured that to do foreign policy right, the president needs some wiggle room, some power to decide things, which, you might not want so much domestic stuff. Now, what this really means for you as a future lawyer is that when people argue for giving the president a lot of power in foreign affairs, they often lean on this idea of needing one clear voice, one voice for the country. But legal experts, they've argued about whether sole organ really means all the power or just, kind of the main role. Especially when Congress has also passed laws about that same issue.
So the Supreme Court is saying, hold on, foreign policy, that's a different beast. You need one voice, and that's the president. And because of this power he already has, Congress has, throughout history, given the president more freedom in this area. But I mean, if the president is the only organ, what happens to Congress's job? You know, the Constitution says they declare war, they approve treaties. Does sole organ, like, weaken those checks and balances?
Oh, that's a huge question. And it really shows you how tense this whole area of law is. The court, they did say Congress has a part to play, but they emphasized, like, the president is the top dog when it comes to actually dealing with other countries day to day. They pointed back to times when Congress had, for sure, given the president a lot of power in foreign policy. They felt like this joint resolution, it wasn't just Congress throwing their hands up and giving up all their power. It said what the goal was, peace in the Chaco War, and then let the president figure out if an embargo was the way to get there. To the court, that was enough of a framework.
It's amazing, right? Like, the two courts are looking at totally different things. District court is all about what power is being given away, the decision about whether the embargo will actually work. Supreme Court, they're more focused on who is getting that power, the president, and specifically when it comes to foreign stuff.
That's a really smart way to see it. The level of scrutiny, like how closely they looked at the delegation, it was just totally different.
Right.
Domestically, like inside the U.S., the non-delegation doctrine, it's pretty strict. Congress usually has to give what they call intelligible principles, you know, guidelines, for how the executive branch is supposed to use that power. But with foreign policy, the court was way more chill about giving the president a lot of leeway. Now, for you, the big thing about this whole non-delegation doctrine is it's supposed to stop Congress from just dumping their lawmaking power on the president without saying how he's supposed to use it. This case really pushes that doctrine to the limit, especially when we're talking foreign affairs.
And this decision from 1936, it's still relevant, right? We see Curtis Wright popping up all the time in conversations about, you know, how much power the president has when it comes to foreign policy, even today.
Oh, totally. Curtis Wright has been cited, like, a ton in cases after it, you know, to support this idea that the president has broad powers in foreign stuff. A big one, maybe you've come across it in law school, Dames and Moore versus Reagan, that had to do with the Iran hostage crisis. The court in that case, they leaned on Curtis Wright to say, yeah, what the president did to settle those international claims, that was okay.
But this whole sole organ thing, it's not like everyone just accepts it and no questions asked, right?
No.
I mean, sure, it makes sense. We need the president to be decisive, to speak with one voice in foreign policy. But some people worry, like, what if this gives one branch way too much power, especially in something as huge as dealing with other countries?
Totally valid concerns. Those come up all the time. Sole organ, it can be interpreted really broadly. And critics, they're like, hang on, is this going to be used to say the president can do whatever he wants internationally? No one can stop him. You got to remember, even after Curtis Wright, later cases, Zivotofsky versus Kerry is a good example. They said, no, no, Congress still has some control over the president in foreign affairs. The power is not unlimited. Separation of powers, it might work a bit differently in this area, but it's still there. Like, imagine the president makes some big agreement with another country, but Congress didn't specifically say yes to it. And he says, well, Curtis Wright says I can. What would you think about that? You, as a future lawyer, you know, what are the arguments for and against that, given this whole sole organ thing and the idea that we need checks and balances?
That's a good one to think about. So if you're a law student listening, trying to wrap your head around all this, what are the big, really important things you need to remember about Curtis Wright?
I'd say, first off, courts don't judge the non-delegation doctrine the same way when it's domestic stuff versus foreign stuff. President gets a lot more freedom with foreign policy. Second, this case really shows you how unique the president's job is, how he has powers that just come with the office, and how he's the main guy representing the U.S. to the rest of the world. That adds a whole new layer to how we usually think about separation of powers. And lastly, yeah, Curtis Wright is a huge case for understanding executive power and foreign policy, but it doesn't mean the president can do whatever he wants. Congress can still step in, and other courts have said, whoa, hold up, there are limits here.
So as you keep going in your legal studies, think about this. How would you balance things? How would you balance the need for a president who can act quickly and decisively on the world stage with this fundamental idea that no one branch gets too much power, you know, checks and balances? United States versus Curtis Wright, it makes you think, it challenges you. And that's something any lawyer, any future lawyer needs to wrestle with. Maybe this deep dive will spark you to look into other cases, read what the experts say about separation of powers, all that stuff.
It's a really rich area.
It's fascinating. And Curtis Wright, it keeps giving us insights even today.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.